Stay connected to the world around you. KPBS brings you trusted news, compelling stories, and in-depth reporting every day. Wherever life takes you, KPBS is here, on the radio, online, and on the go. Discover more at kpbs.org.
You are now listening to Meridian Arts.
The story you're about to hear is true. It takes place in the wild world of rap and contains mature content that may not be appropriate for all audiences. Like N.W.A. said,
parental discretion's advised.
That evolution, when you start rhyming, you grow, and then you understand. And then once we became ourselves and became the San Diego rap group is when things just went, just skyrocketed.
You took a spot that no one was taking.
Right.
I'm going to shut the garage.
Right. Wow. Peace. My name is Parker Edison. I'm fascinated by the impact of rap writers. Hip-hop's 50th anniversary yielded a bounty of articles and interviews. And being the black rap nerd that I am, I started to notice certain cities were special. Their contributions sit differently. Some places have something about their contribution that makes them unique. San Diego is one of those cities for a couple of reasons. I tapped in with some close friends I've been discussing rap with over the years. We put together this series to break it all down for you. I'm gonna map the whole thing, but this is the deal. This isn't the history of hip-hop. This isn't a complete timeline, but it is what happened. Some details will be left out. When we talk about the first man to walk on the moon, there's little mention of who gassed the rocket. We hit the important parts, the takeoff, the landing, one step for all mankind. Keep that in mind as you listen to this. This is about San Diego rap and the incredible way it got to where it is today. You ready? This is San Diego Story.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Paint Care, offering households and businesses in California more than 800 leftover paint drop-off sites for recycling. Quantities of 100-plus gallons of paint may qualify for a large volume pickup. Learn more at paintcare.org.
If you're with us for episode one, you're in the loop of how one small independent record label begat another, leading to one of San Diego's earliest rap records. Worldwide DJ Gil, an integral player in San Diego rap, was making moves in the city. But I don't know if you understand how big some of those moves were or the pedigree of the people involved.
Well, there was the group, which is the first rap group in San Diego to sign a major deal. It was a group called the Vicious Beat Posse. It was a compilation with like four or five groups in the crew. DJ Gil, you heard of DJ Gil, San Diego DJ? He was the producer. But before it was that, it was a DJ crew called Mid-City Productions. And I was part of that crew. And we were doing like house parties around San Diego, but doing it in a big way. Like we all had jackets and we had a big truck with crazy speakers and DJ coffins with the turntables in them and all that. You know what I mean? We just had the whole, we'd show up with like four or five DJs to do a house party. You know what I mean? So that came out of that was DJ Gil and the Vicious Beat Posse.
That's DJ Jam. Born in Maryland and raised in San Diego, you might recognize him from the Up in Smoke DVD, which documented the legendary West Coast tour selling out arenas in 47 cities. You'll hear his name come up for a few reasons throughout this series.
I was doing my mixtapes. Dr. Dre used to do a mixtape at the end of the year, and he would have like all the hits of the year in a mix, like little portions of each song over different beats. So it wasn't like you just heard one song after another. He was master mixing, four tracking. I think he did that, the first one in 1985. So after I heard that, I had already started emulating what Dre was doing on his four-track mixtapes, how he would have rappers on it. That's how Ice Cube and N.W.A. and all those guys got, you know, people knew about them because of those mixtapes, because he had them rapping before his master mix at the beginning of the tape. And nobody had done anything like that before. And as a DJ just coming up, that was it to me. You know what I mean? I was like, whoa, how did he do that? You know, I went and got me a four-track. You know what I mean? I started tracking my mixes, doing master mixes. Then I got MCs from San Diego, you know what I mean? And started putting MCs on it, doing the same thing Dre was doing. And then I started doing the gangster mixes probably 87, 88. Swooped up Black Mikey.
Two times for your mind as I drop my dog bomb on all of mankind. I write and recite my position like a heretic.
And I started putting him on it. That's how people knew about Black Mikey on that level. Because my tapes were selling from here to the Bay Area You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At all the mom-pa swap meets, all that eventually. You hear Ice-T talking about the old school mix and all that. You know what I mean? Those old school mixtapes, I did 5 volumes and they were all around LA. And on my old school mixtapes, they were master mixes at the beginning of those too. I didn't just limit it to my hip hop mixes. I did all my mixtapes like that.
Just to make sure that you're keeping up with this, because we're not just talking SD rap history. This is West Coast rap history. Dr. Dre is the first, and DJ Jam is the second person doing these kind of mixtapes out here on the West Coast.
Well, I was telling you, they started selling my mixtapes at swap meets in San Diego, right? People were copying, duplicating them, right? And giving them to the homies. And then, of course, they would copy them for all their friends, and they just got all over the high schools in San Diego. So there was a guy from Oceanside, I think his name was Chris, if I can remember. He had the record booths at Spring Valley Swap Meet, Kobe Swap Meet by the Sports Arena, and Oceanside Swap Meet. At that time, they were really selling. And he was like, man, I need to introduce you to Steve Yano, right? And I was like, who is that? And he was like, that's who I get Dre's tapes from. He's the source. Steve Yano was the dude with the record booth at the Rhodium Swap Meet in L.A. You couldn't, you know what I mean? They didn't sell them at the mom and pop shops, nowhere except for the Rhodium at Steve Yano. Steve Yano is also the person who had the recording studio. That's where Dre recorded all of this stuff. It was also the recording studio for DJ Quick and Second to None and Hi-C. Steve Yano managed all that. He was the manager. He was like, hey, man, you know, go talk to him. I think he might be interested in picking yours up. So I drove to the Rhodium Swap Meet, saw his operation. I introduced myself to Steve Yano. He was waiting to meet me. I gave him my end of 86 master mix on the spot. It was busy, so he didn't have time to like put it in and play, you know, and he was selling. So he was like, cool. I chopped it up with him. And then that following week, Steve Yano called me. And he was like, man, I listened to your mixtape, man. This is fire. I would love to start carrying your mixtapes. And boy, that was it. And then that's when LA got a dose of who I was. You know what I mean? They didn't know who I was because I was, you know, I wasn't from there, but they heard the mixtape at the Rhodium exclusively.
DJ Jam mentioned a powerful promotional tool. A mixtape is a collection of music recorded onto a cassette tape or CD. These days, they can also come in the form of an MP3 or streamable link like SoundCloud. Smooth, seamless transitions blending one song to another are a trademark. Because of this inability to skip from song to song, the mixtape requires the listener to consider the tape in its entirety.
He went to go live with my uncle in Long Beach. When he came back after the summer, he came back and he was locking and popping. And we were like, what the hell is this, man? You know, he's all telling us, this is a new dance, this and that. He had bought a record, which was Sugar Hill Gang. Year after that, he brought home Dougie Fresh's record, The Show. Dude, it was like before anything, and we're like tripping out. Like, dude, what the hell is this? And he started telling us that this is beatboxing, this is this and that.
And he got it from where?
He was living in Long Beach.
That's DJ Mike Ski of LOD. Recognized by many as the first big rap group in San Diego, they hail from San Ysidro. Geographically, the most southern community in California, and even they were influenced by those Rhodium Swap Meet mixtapes. But the inspiration might not have gone just one way. According to Mike Ski's brother and fellow group member Lawrence LSD DeGracia, there may have been an interesting give and take between San Diego and LA with LOD.
The only persons that came down was NWA.
No, what? No, it was.
They weren't
it was,
even NWA it was, at that time.
It was, oh, no, it was a Wrecking Crew?
And CIA.
CIA?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was. That
CIA was Ice Cube.
Sir Jinx.
Sir Jinx, and their cousin was like the DJ. And they opened up for Dre and the Wrecking Crew at the Sweetwater Roller Skating Rink.
Yeah. And see, right there, we were already a group, huh?
Yeah, we were already a group.
Yeah, but we were see, right there, we were always, since we started the group, we were always wearing San Diego gear. We used the San Diego Padre jerseys and stuff. When they became the NWA and all that
They started wearing all the LA stuff.
You see that they were from LA because they started wearing LA stuff.
What they're saying may land a little far-fetched to some, but it's really not if you're aware how closely the underground scenes intermingle.
Like you said, we go to LA and we'd literally be doing like what we're doing right now. We'd be at B-Real's house in his room. Wow. Just chopping it up. That's how we would get the game with what's going on at the labels, because the artists were telling us.
Yeah, and when they got signed, they were tripping out that we didn't have.
Yeah, they would
signed.
Come they to San like, Diego and they go, "You guys ain't signed yet?"
LOD consists of rapper Willie Will, Lawrence LOD DeGracia, and Miguel DJ Mike Ski DeGracia. The DeGracia's older brother, MC Robbie Rob, acted as a mentor to the group from its inception. Hold up. I said earlier there are themes you'll hear come up repeatedly throughout this series. 1. San Diego rap life and San Diego street life run very close together. 2. San Diego has a knack for being criminally ahead of the mainstream. 3. SD rappers tend to excel because our art and business acumen are often equally sharp. Now add this to the list. 4. Our love-hate relationship with record labels. Everybody in the entertainment world knows if you want to make it big, you got to go to LA or New York. Imagine those two places are parents, and they really believe in record labels. San Diego is sort of like the kid who rebels against things their parents believe. Because we're so close to LA, we know how the industry works and either want nothing to do with it or we know exactly the way we want to move with it. LOD's mentor, Robbie Rob, is the latter.
Yeah, man. And Rob was
it was basically rap. All business.
Yeah.
And the way to make money is the record companies are the ones that make all the money.
Mm-hmm.
The artists just get percentage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start my own record company. Then we can get artists on our record company and we get paid off of their records. We pressed our own records.
Right. Yeah.
We did everything. We even distributed our own records.
We went from everything. Recorded. We went to LA to record our record. We got our masters. We came down here and we had what was that? One in Bonita? They pressed our records, huh?
Yeah, they pressed our records and cassettes. Everything. And this is what I meant by when it took off. What was happening is we was bringing them, like, let's say we would go to the swap meet and drop off like 20 or 15 cassette tapes. And then the warehouse, we would drop off 20 cassette tapes. And then by the time we would get back to the pad, they'd be like, "Hey, we need more tapes.
You sold out.
Hey, we need more tapes."
Growing up with LA does have its perks. Even if we choose to abstain from the industry politics, it's because we know how they work, vis-a-vis we know how to work them.
You know, it started getting out because we got played on all four radio stations.
Yep.
Which was Q106, Z90, yep. 91X, and 92.5.
And you were the first.
We're the first, yep. Yeah.
The smile on my face, we get to the swap meet, we're dropping off the tapes because we just had dropped them. And the guy goes, "Yeah, you guys are outselling MC Hammer right now." And we're like,
yeah, we're outselling like a lot of the major artists.
They were asking, like a lot of people were asking for our record, and yeah. They didn't know where to get it.
And next thing you know, we were getting known so much that, you remember the Warehouse Music?
Yep.
That we're the first independent label to get into the Warehouse Music.
Wow.
Without a major distribution.
Safe to say, LOD was holding it down from the South Bay. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll hear who else was cooking in the city.
That I remember, there was a group of in North County too. That it's funny, man, because they're the first. They are on a major record label. Mm. They're called Vicious Beat Boss.
Yep. Be right back. Welcome back. Remember DJ Gil? He was doing remixes at the radio station, did his own demo, and got offered a record deal at the end of episode 1. Let's see what happened next.
So I had 4 acts that ended up getting signed to MCA, which was Marv Vicious, MC Debbie, DBX, and then...
Vicious Beat Posse.
Vicious Beat Posse.
Okay, so Vicious Beat Posse is 4 small crews,
mm-hmm.
all connected, and then you're doing production...
All the production, except for one song.
A la the RZA.
Yeah.
Gil is naturally cool. And I don't know if his chill disposition conveys all the excitement that was wound up around these groups at the time. Gil is the producer, though. If his view is from behind the scenes, it might be helpful for us to hear from someone who was center stage.
Started from freestyle dancing. I throw events called like the Cypher, throw Kumba Festival for years. got numerous dance competitions. I've been seen on Bump It Up with D Barnes. We've been on BET, done tours, 28 City tours. We've done shows with, did a couple shows with Big Daddy Kane.
This is dancer Michael Gift. His AKA is Pokey. He's one half of the legendary rap duo Gumby and Pokey, who in the last few years were name-checked by hip-hop historian Dart Adams for their legendary skills on stage.
You had Vicious Beat Posse. We were signed to MCA Records, and our label mates, which was heavy. We had like Heavy D, rest in peace, and we had Bell Biv DeVoe, BBD.
Hey, you mentioned a bus tour when we were talking earlier. You remember that?
Yes, it was by Greyhound, and that is very challenging. We went to Philly, and I remember my suitcase was lost with all my clothes and all my dance clothes. Us being from the West Coast, we're finding out how, you know, like, what's those, remember, everybody used to rock the goose down jackets? But we were like, you know, it was, whew, it's crazy, but a fun time.
Pokey, DJ Gill, and the rest of Vicious Beat Posse were red hot. A label deal, national tours. The group's high-energy stage showing upbeat rhythms were packing venues. Their legalized dope video looks like it could have been filmed in New Jack City. The group was perfect for TV.
But all of a sudden, we got a phone call saying that they wanted us on Pump It Up. And we were like, what?
Pump It Up was a weekly music TV series. On the air before BET's Rhapsody, popular hip-hop artists joined host D Barnes to promote their music or latest video. The show was rooted in the culture, and it's possible these sensibilities led to Pump It Up's choice to play the vid in the midst of a quiet controversy.
Pump It Up, I believe they did. They played it because MTV wouldn't. If you listen to the song Legalized Dope, they go,
knowledge is dope, so I'm giving it to you.
Meaning saying it's just like I'm giving you information. Not dope meaning, it was a metaphor, not dope meaning the drug, but dope meaning once you get the information, dope. So with the terminology back then, it was too much, and they wouldn't play the video on MTV, which is very sad because they had millions of viewers back then. Millions. And we were just like, I think that actually hurt us in our career a little bit.
Wow. Banned on MTV. That's nutty. So what would you say ended Vicious Beat Posse?
DJ Gill.
Management, the guy, that's where he was pocketing all the money. That's all. He would get, you know, when you release a single, you get $25,000 for it. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to go towards your marketing and all that other stuff. That's a lot back then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's a lot more now. But I'm saying, he wasn't doing any of that. He was, you know, whatever, his girlfriends, whatever, that kind of stuff, and just doing what he was doing.
I was so hyped on just to go on tour and just to dance in front of people, right? I had no representation. I had no nothing on contract saying, okay, Pokey, each city you're getting $2,000 or $3,000. I had nothing. And that's one thing I tell people, like, now, if you're dancing or you're rhyming or things like that, you make sure you have a manager and you make sure that he dots the I's and cross the T's, because like what Q-Tip said.
Industry rule number 4080.
Record company people are shady.
From Meridian Arts and KPBS, this is episode 2 of Rap Diego, a San Diego story. In our next episode, we see the start of Chicano rap.
Because everything after that was Chicano rap by default, and everything before that got retrofitted into Chicano rap.
And we meet a gangster legend that leaves too soon.
But Gangsta Earn was always coming and say, hey man, I'm gonna rap, I'm this, this, and this. Now, if you wanna know who Gangsta Earn is, he's every sense of the word of the gangster part.
Rap Diego is a co-production of KPBS and Meridian Arts. Host and co-creator, Parker Edison. Episodes written by Jay Smith, Chris Reyes, Don Jegger, and Stephen Flex. Extra special thanks to guest writer, Melody Harold. Editing by Platform Collection. Music soundtrack by Monday Adams. Executive producer for KPBS is Lisa Jane Morissette, KPBS Director of Audio Programming and Operations. Technical and operational support provided by KPBS technical producer, sound designer, Adrian Villalobos, and KPBS producer, Julio Ortiz Franco. This programming is made possible in part by the KPBS Explore Content Fund. Shout out in no particular order to Damn Posse, Bum Rush Posse, MC Deb B, and Demo Records. Talk soon.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Paint Care, offering households and businesses in California more than 800 leftover paint drop-off sites for recycling. Quantities of 100-plus gallons of paint may qualify for a large volume pickup. Learn more at paintcare.org.